He is the author of Opening Minds, A Journey of Extraordinary Encounters, Crop Circles. Opening Minds is one of the first books to argue that man-made crop circles can create the same anomalous energy effects as naturally formed circles. Wow, there is something to contemplate. Opening Minds will also document how crop circles are related to remote viewing and other subtle energy phenomena. Having witnessed the formation of large crop circles made by expert crop circle making teams in England, Dr. Hine learned of the extraordinary phenomena, including telepathic experiences, balls of light, UFO sightings that frequently surround man-made crop circles. He's made experimental circles here and in the UK so as to test whether the circle's anomalous effects can be replicated in those formations made by ordinary people. Dr. Hine now believes that all crop circles, regardless of their origin, create magical effects, his word, magical effects, by virtue of their shape and the subtle interaction between humans, plants, and sacred geometry. In addition to assisting with Institute for Resonance crop circle tours, he continues to teach remote viewing in Boulder and in Japan. His website is www.openingminds.info. In a moment, Dr. Hine. Dr. Hine, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Art, and thanks for having me here. And I know I speak for a lot of listeners in saying thanks for having such a great show for so many years.
Thank you. We have some hum on the telephone.
We do. How's that?
Worse.
Worse. Okay.
Are you on some sort of headset, Doctor?
Yes, hold on.
Okay, let's switch to a real phone.
How's that?
About a million times
okay.
Better.
We got it.
Okay. All right. So it's hard to know where to begin with you, Doctor. It really is hard. I mean, there's so much here. So I guess I better just ask you, give me your best explanation of what you're calling subtle energy is, please.
Subtle energy phenomena are a whole range of phenomena that relate to biological organisms and life energies that really were never really addressed by mechanistic physics that were, you know, that we're taught about in school.
Talking about things like auras?
Yes. Auras, the type of energies that bodies and living things generate, healing energies, chi energy, you know, from
yes.
martial arts, things like that.
Yes.
These energies are very subtle. Some people estimate that they're 10 times weaker than the Earth's magnetic field. So, you know, we've been talking about solar flares. I think how they're very subtle and very weak. In fact, sometimes they're referred to as ultra-weak forces or non-Maxwellian forces. They're very weak, but if you set up the proper equipment, like with random number generators and things like that,
yes,
you can actually measure these forces. In fact, you were getting into this discussion last night with Dr. Frank.
In fact, I was, and we're going to go right back into it.
Yeah.
But first, let me approach it from the skeptic's point of view. Many say, Doctor, they're so damn subtle that they're baloney. They don't exist. They're not real.
Yeah, you know, I might have taken that view myself, you know, before I started studying it, because like you, I read New Scientist magazine, and I kind of have a hard-headed approach to this. But if you look at the statistical data, there's no doubt that these phenomena are real.
All right, make me a believer. What evidence would you offer that these things are real? Your best evidence.
Well, let's just take, in general, to start out with, all of the psychic research that's been done over the last 100 years.
Okay.
When you put all these studies together, there's a type of research that combine statistical studies together, and you can kind of look at the effects over many different studies and get a large sample size. And sometimes the odds that you're getting these results are like in the trillions to one. And that really, by any standard, that's like the gold standard in science. If you get odds that are that high, that's called statistical significance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just look at the experiments that were done in Princeton at the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab. I'm sure you're familiar with this.
I certainly am.
Yeah, well, with the random number generator, they've found that certain global events affect their random number generator. And in the experiments they did, where people would sit at home in front of their PCs and try to affect a random number generator,
yes,
you know, after the cumulative results, after about, I believe, about 8 years or so,
yes,
if you look at the graph, I mean, there are results. There is no doubt. Now, this may challenge our idea about reality that you can affect a device sitting 1,000 miles away.
I know.
But this is the nature of science. It, science doesn't mean that it necessarily has to fit into, you know, with your belief system that you learned in school. It just means you have to look at the data and have an open mind and say, look, what does this mean? I think if you look at the data from this research, when they did the research for the remote viewing program, when Jessica Utz did the study for the CIA,
yes,
asked, you know, did they get good results? She concluded they did. So, you know, we know it's real. We just don't understand exactly how it works.
All right, Simeon, when I spoke to the people who were actually running the program at Princeton, and be assured I did at a very high level, what I detected from them, and maybe you can help me explain this, is a great disinterest in having any publicity about the findings at Princeton. I mean, they just didn't want to really talk about this publicly at all.
Yeah.
Why do you think that would be?
I'm not surprised. These.
Why? I mean, such astounding results surely should be shouted about.
I agree with you completely, and this is why I do this type of research with my colleagues at the Institute for Resonance, because I came out of a traditional academic background, and you cannot study this type of material in a traditional academic background because you'll be considered, you'll be ostracized or marginalized. And, you know, Ingo Swann has gone into this in great detail. I know you've talked to Ingo on this show in the past.
You bet.
In his books, he says that there's this fundamental bias in our society against this sort of phenomena because it goes against the very fundamental things we were taught that define reality.
Yes,
and that's scary for people. And
yes,
if you're an academic in a university, it's going to threaten your job and your, you know, your career, and people, you know, are concerned about this. So,
but doctor, it is measurable, real proof that the energy we're talking about exists. So
yes,
I can understand treading carefully into this field from a career point of view, but once you actually have results you can slam down on somebody's desk and say, here it is, then why would you want to be quiet about it?
I wouldn't want to be quiet about it. In fact, I'm very loud about it, like you and many other people on the show. It's just the reality of the situation is, if you look at the history of science, and anyone who's taken a history of science class will know that science is not always rational. And even with good data, people will turn their minds and not look at the results. Now look at what Scientific American said about manned flight with the Wright brothers back, you know, 80 years ago or so.
Yes, yes.
They said it's impossible. Why? Because things that are heavier than air can't fly. And, you know, we should all keep this in mind when we ride on airplanes nowadays. The fundamental tenets of science, you know, have to be challenged from time to time. And, you know, Thomas Kuhn and others have suggested that we get these paradigm shifts not by people changing their mind, but kind of, you know, by the old cadre just kind of fading
dying
away.
Off.
And I'm afraid that's what's going to have to happen here because
yeah,
there's, it's not only belief systems, Art. It's the whole institutions that are built around these older mindsets. And, you know, I'm not against people making a living and feeling secure. We all want that. But it's coming at the cost of our own health in lots of different ways because we have this new type of science available to us, and yet there's so much resistance to it, you know?
Well, what if this whole mass consciousness thing really is a gigantic power? Let's think about that for a second. Just suppose for a second that it was all really true, and all of this mass consciousness business, if properly directed, would be a power unlike we've ever experienced on Earth. Let's see, would you want to keep that quiet?
I think it depends if, you know, if you're part of the power elite.
You might.
You might want to keep that quiet.
Definitely might.
You know, it depends who you are. It depends where you are in the system. Speaking as a sociologist, it depends where you are in the social system. If you're at the top and you want to keep things the same, you're not going to want people talking about this.
Yeah, you don't want to rock that boat.
No, you don't want to rock that boat. But if you're one of the people that can see a better way and you think, you know, we could actually have a better planet here. We don't need all of the particular problems that we have As some of the guests have pointed out in the past, you know, we don't need these combustion engines anymore if we have zero-point energy machines. But, you know, the real crux of the situation is, and a lot of the research in subtle energy points to this, that our own belief systems affect the ability of these sorts of new technologies to work, if you can believe that.
Are remote viewers using this subtle energy to glean the information they glean in the process of remote viewing?
I believe they are, yes.
Yes.
I think that a lot of these phenomena, you know, really are part and parcel of this larger subtle energy paradigm. Everything from psychokinesis to telepathy to the types of things we see in and around crop circles and all sorts of other phenomena really do seem to me to be part of this other area of energy that is, again, very hard to measure, but empirically, if you look at all the data, suggests that it's there, kind of like some sort of ether.
Psychokinesis, you mentioned that. It's very, very, very interesting. Have you, is there evidence, irrefutable evidence, that somebody has demonstrated that power? Psychokinesis. I mean, I don't know. Where is that evidence?
Well, Art, I saw it myself a couple weeks ago in Japan.
Let's hear it.
This was the most amazing thing I ever saw, I have to say.
Well, okay.
It was on the island of Kyushu in Nagasaki Prefecture.
Right.
In a town called Sasebo. This man will not give interviews. He will not let you take his picture. He will not take any money for his demonstrations. He just has a restaurant that he and his wife operate. You can go there and watch him do these. He does these shows two or three times a day. I saw him bend spoons just by looking at them. Things spin around without him touching it. He could look at people and tell them their birth dates and their names, and he didn't miss once. And he did this with objects that just came from people's pockets.
Breaking. Sounds like a magic stage act.
I would have thought so. You know, this is the way our minds work. We have this mindset that there has to be some explanation.
I know.
But I saw objects become like molten liquid in front of my eyes. You're standing 3 feet in front of this guy. And the person that invited me to see this was actually a surgeon from a hospital who was taking my remote viewing classes in Japan.
Really?
And he said, Simon, you just have to see this. I saw it in front of my eyes, and if I hadn't, you know, I've talked to some of the people in our own military remote viewing unit. Do you know that there were people that were doing this in the unit at DIA?
No, and as a matter of fact, let me tell you, I've interviewed, I believe, every really well-known remote viewer there is.
Yes.
I've interviewed them all, and when you ask them about something like psychokinesis, that's one area where they get real quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, they shouldn't be, because I know for a fact that there were people that were hired alongside the military remote viewers that could do this. They could pick up objects off your desk and melt them with their fingers. I had heard about this, and I hadn't seen it, and when I saw this person doing this, I said, that's exactly what I was describing, what this person saw over at DIA.
How do you know you weren't looking at a parlor trick?
Because I don't know any parlor trick that can make a spoon bend just by looking at it and look at someone and tell them their name. Is there any way to explain that? I don't think so. I don't think you can have a group of people and just randomly select people from the room and tell them their birth dates, their names, and do this repeatedly day after day without missing. I think it really is. I think it's the real thing. And you know why? There's a whole book that documents this called China's Super Psychics that I read several years ago. And it talked about children in China that were born with this ability. So I knew about this ahead of time, and this has been pretty well documented. There are a number of these children that can do this. And so when I saw it, I said, wow, this is what I read about, and here it is actually happening. This person, now, tell me if you can explain this. He was able to take my watch and cup his hands over it, and the hands spun around on the watch. At the end of the show, he said, come here for a second.
So it was a show.
Well, it's kind of like a show, but it's something that he could demonstrate that I don't think was explainable by any conventional magic. In fact, if there's anyone that can explain how someone just could make the hands on the watch spin around simply by touching it, I mean, not turning the dial, just by touching it.
Yeah.
I'd like to know, at the end of the show, he just said, come over here for a second, I'm going to show you something. He ran his hands over my forearm, and I could feel the electricity coming out of his hands. I could feel like a mild shock. Kind of like you'd get from.
Really?
Yes, I could feel the electricity. And actually, having spoken to a colleague of mine in Boulder, Colorado, Lorraine Moeller, she told me that she knew of someone that could also do this in Boulder, but he was, again, very secret about it because too many people had expressed resistance to it. But he said, oh, I know all about that. I've seen someone do that, too. So apparently there are people that could do it. And, in fact, Uri Geller, you know, they tested him extensively at Stanford.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, Russell Targ and Hal Putoff did say that he could do things that they could find no explanation for. I mean, he was able to move things, and they had him in a chair, and there's no way he could have touched something in the other room. So, you know, when you see things that defy our sense of reality, your mind, you know, it kind of wants to snap back into a state where it says, that can't be true, that can't be true. And even someone like myself that's involved in these areas has that reaction. And yet we know there are things that are beyond what we can believe that are true, and it just takes a while to get used to them.
Subtle, and they're all in this subtle energy category?
I think they're all in subtle, all in the same category. You know, Dr. William Tiller, from emeritus from Stanford University Engineering Department, he's talked about this extensively, and he says that they're all really the same thing. There is some sort of chi pump that we all have, a kind of a psychic energy or pranic energy pump that we're all connected to that we don't know we have. And this is why some of us, you know, do this remote viewing training and other things to kind of remind people they have this ability. You, if you tap into this subtle energy field that is all around us, you can channel this energy through your body and connect to all sorts of information that our conscious mind doesn't have access to. It comes through the subconscious. This is why you'll hear remote viewers often talking, you know, from the CRV system that you've had many people talk about on your show here. It comes through the subconscious, and remote viewers learn to have a dialogue with their own subconscious because the subconscious has a bandwidth capacity, get this, of like a million times what the conscious mind can do. So if you think you're smart, your subconscious is like a super genius compared to every, you know, conscious thought that you have. And that's where this comes through. And we're still learning about how this actually happens, but this is what seems to be going on.
You mentioned that that person was very quiet because of the, I don't know, the reaction, I guess, of people to that ability. And that's an interesting area to focus on. Of course, you know, a couple hundred years ago, 100 years ago, whatever, we'd have burned somebody like that squarely at the stake. Well, an interesting thing has happened in modern times. We still more or less want to do that. Simeon, hold on. Okay, Vince in Seattle, Washington says, hey, Art, you're right. Parlor tricks. Scientists are the easiest to fool. What do you think?
You know what? I have one more thing to say about that. Okay. Sony, did you know Sony had a psychic research division?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, it was run by a man named Seiko, and I think they discontinued it recently, but it was in operation for several years. In fact, Dean Radin talked about it in his book, The Conscious Universe, and they went to film this guy with one of their high-speed cameras. I think it's the only time he let someone film them. You know, 20,000 frames a second or something like that.
Sure.
They said there was no magic tricks there.
No magic. All right.
Couldn't explain how he did it, but he said no sleight of hand. Those bottles were really stretching in his hand into something that was 2 feet long, a Coke bottle or a lighter.
Well, okay, you heard what I said just as we went in a break, the burning at the stake and all of that. Well,
yeah.
You know, we don't really, I guess, burn people at the stake, but I do wonder about the life expectancy of somebody who demonstrates supernatural powers. You know, a lot of people are going to think, I wrote down the work of the devil, and then I got this other fast blast. This is from John in Westchester County, New York. All right, you ready for this? Art, I truly believe crop circles are a sign of evil in our time. My gut tells me that Satan is doing this to mock God. Jesus said, quote, the harvesters are few and the harvest is plenty. The devil has been harvesting souls to hell and he's boasting with crop circles. Okay, but see, doctor, this is reality, brother. It's what's out there.
Yes, you could say, Art, you can rest your case. I mean, we like to think we've changed in a couple hundred years. We like to think we don't burn people at the stake, yet we still have these belief systems that if you exhibit these abilities, you're going to be punished or killed or something like that and burnt at the stake. And I think subconsciously we're all still afraid of this. Look, how many of us are afraid to really talk about these topics in the open with people that we know, our neighbors? I mean, we're comfortable talking about this at night, you know, between each other. But what about with, you know, people we know? We have this fear of it. And even I know this person in Japan was threatened by the Magicians Union, and they made him call it magic because they said it was, like, not legal to do it without saying it was really magic. Even.
They made him call it magic?
In fact, he calls his place the Magic Parlor because the local Magicians Union was going to take him to court.
What?
And yes. This is the...
I'd like to understand how that one unfolded.
Yes, I was told that he wanted to say it was psychic demonstration.
Yes.
And the local magician said it would put them out of work if he did this.
In other words, you can't call it real?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And so he now calls it the Magic Parlor because they threatened to take him to court because it would be like unfair competition. Now, can you believe that? Now, let me give you a more serious example of this. Have you heard of Dr. Fritz from Brazil, the quantum psychic surgeon?
I have. Yes, I have.
Okay. He treats, you know, like 1,000 people a day with psychic surgery, and I know someone that was very skeptical, Masao Maki, who, you know, is a Japanese author,
yes,
runs a sushi restaurant in Boulder, is also a very famous author in Japan. He went down to research this person. He calls himself a guru buster, that he is a skeptic, but he concluded this was real, and he's shown me some videos of Dr. Fritz. This is actually a computer programmer that begins to channel, apparently, a German doctor that was deceased, you know, during World War II.
I must tell you, Doctor, my eyes roll when you say channeling.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I've always had a problem with it.
Well, whatever you want to call it, something takes over his awareness, and he becomes a German doctor, even though he doesn't speak German in real life, and he operates on people.
Well, that's certainly impressive. And
you can see the video.
He operates on people in what manner?
He operates on them with his hands, with all sorts of instruments, hammers and things. These people are awake.
Excuse me, hammers?
Hammers and screwdrivers and
screwdrivers.
Machine tools.
Machine tools.
It's on the video. I've seen the video of this. Now, here's the amazing thing.
Don't the medical authorities in Japan,
they're
not supposed to use screwdrivers and hammers.
Here's the thing. Let me just say briefly. People feel no pain. You can see the video of them smiling while he's working on them. They feel no pain.
While
they
get up hammering away, right?
Hammering away on their spinal columns and things. They're awake, Art. No anesthesia. And it seems unbelievable, but, you know, Maki wrote this book, Brazil's Quantum Surgeon.
Yes.
Basically, it comes down to subtle energy and the fact that we're all at some level energy, and energy is fluid.
Wait a minute. What's subtle about a hammer and a screwdriver?
Well, what Dr. Fritz says is he doesn't really need those, but some people need to see some sort of medical instruments or something to convince them that, you know, something is actually happening. He says he actually doesn't even really need to
touch
it.
Well, that would convince me. If I saw the doctor roll in this sterile tray with a whole bunch of, you know, big old hammers, claw hammers and screwdrivers and stuff, I'm out of there. way out of there.
You don't know whether to laugh or to shriek when you see this. I mean, it looks awfully scary, but the people walk away and they seem to be better. Well, here's the why I'm telling you this.
But how can he even do this without being a physician?
When he acts like Dr. Fritz, and Dr. Fritz has actually worked through many different people over the years.
Yeah.
This is the issue. A lot of, even in Brazil, they've said you don't have a medical license, you can't do this.
Yes.
In Japan, the government said you can come here if you don't actually do any of this sort of stuff with the machine tools and everything. If you just, like, talk to people and project energy, we'll let you come here. But just before he was about to arrive, when I was there last September, just like the Magicians Union did with this psychokinetic individual, the Doctors Union said this is kind of like unfair competition and all this, and they denied his visa, even though he had agreed not to actually operate on people. But he does this in Brazil, treating, you know, hundreds of people a day, and it's pretty well documented. And when they've measured his brain waves, unsurprisingly, it's elevated to about 40,000 hertz.
This is getting into serious research, and I too have seen, 60 Minutes programs. I believe that, for example, documented all kinds of incredible things about yogis that could control things that are uncontrollable in their own bodies. All, a lot of that's been documented.
Yeah.
As same kind of thing, huh?
I think it's the same sort of thing. Again, it really challenges our belief systems about what is real. I mean, you may have some sort of a boggle point, as some people call it, to the idea of channeling, and I have my own boggle points to other types of ideas. We all do.
You're right about that.
No, we all do. It's part of being a human being, and I think it's healthy to be skeptical. At the same time, we know we live in a universe that is considerably more infinite than our minds can comprehend. And things, just imagine a couple hundred years ago, you know, people burning witches at the stake for things that people now pay for training in remote viewing, and people would have been killed for that. Go back a couple hundred years before that to the Middle Ages, where we really thought we were the center of the universe, like planet Earth was it. And they threatened Galileo and Copernicus with talking the fact that this could be an ordinary star and we're just circling a star. So we know that ideas change, and it's just culture is very slow to, you know, evolve.
Yes.
Yeah.
Since people with these abilities tend to be quiet about it, then how many would you guess might be around, say, in the population of the U.S., that aren't making it public? People that, you know, can move things with their minds, people that can perhaps affect the thinking of others, for example. That's another thing, incidentally,
yeah,
that remote viewers are really quiet about.
Yes. The people that worked originally with the remote viewing program were like natural psychics, like Ingo,
Swan,
and other people.
Yes.
And there's a certain percentage of the population that I really believe is naturally psychic. I'm not one of them, okay? I didn't think I could do any of this like most people probably believe. I don't know what the percentage is, but I would guess it's more than we're willing to admit. And if people weren't teased about this when they were smaller in school and we're not, you know, not ostracized, we might have more people that could really be helping us be more in the open about this.
Well, you know, if you think people get upset at somebody else's ability to, say, just, I don't know, cause a glass to tip over on a table without touching it or bend spoons or whatever, if they really believe that person can do these things, they'll have one level of upsetness. If they think that somebody else can actually direct their thoughts, oh, doctor, they get really upset.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of scary to think about that. And it does seem that there are people that can do that also. I haven't encountered that directly, but I think that everyone, to some degree, has the ability to learn how to do this. And that was my you know, big learning experience from remote viewing. I didn't think that everybody could do this, but if you've taken a course in this and seen demonstrations, you know, everybody has this ability to some extent or another. And you know, we're not taught about this in school. And as we talked about earlier, I think the elites that kind of direct our society don't want people doing this. But I think everyone has the ability. In fact, the demonstration I saw in Japan, believe it or not, the lecture that he gave people at the end, he said the whole point of this was to show people, just very similarly to what your guest was talking about last night, that we live in a quantum universe where our belief systems get this direct our reality. That was the whole point of the show. And this is what, you know, this is what we're going towards, is that our belief systems are what create the structure we see around us. It looks very solid out there, the physical world we live in, but it's really being constructed by our awareness.
Okay, you did something really interesting. I had never thought about the experiment that you have apparently performed, and that is, I've heard many stories about the properties of crop circles and the experiences and the measurements people have made inside crop circles. So anomalous, all of this information. But I never thought, gee, somebody could go out and create a crop circle, human work, and then see if the same kind of subtle energy abilities are present within that man-made circle. You did that, huh?
Right. That's exactly what we've been doing.
Fascinating. What were the results?
Well, you know, I've been working with you know Ron Russell. He's been on your show in the past, and we've been working together since 1996. And we've had this idea once we realized people did make, you know, some of the crop circles that we were looking at. We didn't originally think that people could make any of them, but once we met circle makers, they told us, you know, when we go out there at night to make these, really strange things happen. and no one, you know, this is the untold story of the crop circles. It's not only later on do we see strange things, it's while you're making them we see strange things. So Ron and I thought, well, if we make some, would we see strange things? These circle makers told us, and I'm specifically referring to people like Matt Williams and others who've talked to us extensively, that they were originally researchers, and they had this idea if they went out and made small ones, maybe the whole process would speed up. They'd get more of them in the fields around England, like a communication process.
How did you even get crop circle makers to talk to you?
They approached us. They had seen us there for several years, and we just thought these people were like, you know, hoaxers, that they're just kind of making up tall tales. They can't really do it. But they said to us, do you want to see us make crop circles? You know, just we're going to do one. The first one was in the daytime, and Linda Moulton Howe was there too. And they said, we've paid for the field. The farmer knows about it. If you just want to watch us make one, you know, you're welcome to come. And we said, hey, you know, we've got nothing to lose. We went out and watched Matt Williams and his team, you know, do a legal formation in the daytime.
All right, so what exactly happened?
Well, here's what happened, Art. We had been using this electrostatic measuring device. You might be familiar with this. It measures electrostatic charges in a laboratory environment. Yeah.
Yes, I am.
And now you have experienced these kind of anomalous electrostatic charges in your amateur radio antennas.
Yes.
I've heard you talking to Bonnie in the past about these kind of anomalous energies you're getting you can't explain.
Absolutely correct.
Right. Well, when I heard that show, I think it was about a year ago, my ears perked up because we had been measuring these crop circles with our static electricity meter. And we thought we had a litmus test for distinguishing the so-called real ones from the man-made ones, because the first three man-made ones that we knew were man-made that had been done in, you know, in public and filmed, there was no energy charge in the meter. They were like statically flat across the whole circle.
Hmm.
And other ones, the meter would jump around like a couple hundred volts as soon as you went into the circle.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And sometimes it's gone up to 1,000 volts.
That's a whole lot.
The one we did in Kansas last year, and the pictures of this actually are on the website in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. If you click on pictures, you can see exactly what I'm talking about. We got like a 2,000-volt change in a circle that was only like 12 feet across, and it seemed
smokes.
To affect the film and everything. We can talk about that in a moment. Well, we thought, hey, if we watch Matt Williams make a crop circle, we can test our hypothesis, does the man-made one affect the meter? And he, you know, he and his crew went out there and made them with the ropes and the boards, and we thought, you know, this is not like the other ones we've seen, but at least we'll be able to test it. Well, the meter started jumping around, and our whole theory that we had had for the past year that the man-made ones were statically flat just went out the window. But, hey, that's science. I mean, we had data, and it went against what our hypothesis was, but tough luck. What we realized was the man-made ones were creating this change in static charge, too. We just didn't have a large enough sample.
What were you in, a wheat field or what?
Yeah, we were in a wheat field.
All right, well, all right. Let's say we've got fairly dry wheat, tall, dry wheat. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't the process of compacting that down, you'd have wheat rubbing on wheat, you'd have the possibility of an electrostatic charge accumulating, I would
yes.
think, wouldn't you?
Completely. That's exactly what's going on. I think what you're getting towards is what we're becoming to believe is true about them. It has something to do with the pressure, maybe the piezoelectric effect.
Yes.
If you know what I'm getting at, yeah, I think you're going in the same direction.
I certainly do.
There's
yes.
a pressure there, that, and this is something that Colin Andrews pointed out to me, that normally when the stalks of wheat are standing there, they're like a capacitor because they're insulated by air. But when they're on the ground and flattened, they're now touching each other, physically touching.
That's right.
It could create energy currents circulating around in a swirling spiral motion in the circle that you don't normally have in a wheat field. And that in itself could be generating energies, which I believe, I mean, we believe, the people I work with, Ron and others, that could be responsible for all sorts of changes in the wheat plants, irrespective of whether it was created by ionic plasmas or stomper boards or extraterrestrials, which really do leave crop circles behind.
Okay.
Pressure is changing, yeah.
Okay, then why wouldn't it be reasonable to project, Doctor, that the simple creation of an electrostatic field in some specific formation, in other words, you could create an artificial electrostatic field, for example, in a room, or in a, I don't know, a large aircraft hangar or something, you could set up instruments that would create an electrostatic field in a certain pattern around somebody, and then you might begin to measure, you could even control the intensity of the electrostatic charge, for example, Doctor, and get in the middle of this and see what kind of things manifest themselves.
Well, that's definitely a very good experiment.
Is it?
I think it is. It's because when you make those energy changes, and you know that static electricity, it doesn't have to have a lot of amps. You know, to have, you could have high voltage but low amperage.
Very high voltage and very low current, yes.
Right. But you know what subtle energy says is you don't need a lot of charge to make something happen. It could be a subtle field. Now, here's the thing. If it's in a coherent shape, like a crystalline form, one of these sacred geometry shapes that you see in crop circles,
yes,
and it has that kind of electrostatic pattern that is different from the surrounding field, it really could create an effect that you may not get if you don't have a shape there. In other words, the shape combined with the electrostatic field.
Yes. Well, that's why I said, yeah. For example, a big hangar, you create an electrostatic field and duplicate, pick a crop circle that's had a very large anomalous effect when people enter it and duplicate that and create an electrostatic field. You could even, as I say, control the level of the charge and then measure paranormal phenomena of those who are inside that field, and you could even test at different voltage ranges.
No, you could do that. I'm not sure if the static charge is the only thing that's going on there, but that's certainly an interesting experiment. It's certainly an interesting idea.
Well, that would either rule in or rule out the static field itself as a causative agent.